It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Discussions today of the new economic normal, of economic numbers that matter, and of turning a profit 140 characters at a time. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Wednesday, today the 25th of January. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Another day, another couple of executive actions, policy memorandums from the White House. One to crack down on, by which the Trump administration means deny federal financing to sanctuary cities. The other to set in motion, as promised, the building of a wall along the Mexican border. Timing being everything, Marketplace's Kimberly Adams is reporting along the border for us this week. Hey, Kimberly.
Hey, Kai.
You today somehow, and I don't know how you got this gig, you spent part of the morning on a helicopter flying over the Mexican-U.S. border. Tell me what it looks like. Tell me what you saw in terms of how this wall is going to be built.
Well, one thing that really stood out to me is just how rugged the terrain over which the border fence, as it is down here, has to go, and potentially President Trump's border wall, which he said today is going to be built and that construction is going to start right away. Of course, we don't know yet what he means by a wall, because most of the barrier in this area is some kind of fence, either a sheet metal fence or sort of a very heavy-duty chain link fence or sometimes big, tall steel columns with a flat sheet of steel on the top, but there are ways that people get over every single one of those types.
This is, in no small sense of the word, an infrastructure story, right? The whole infrastructure ball of wax.
It really is, and an expensive infrastructure story. I was just talking to one rancher recently who told me that they are redoing the fence that borders his property, and that's costing a little over $4 million a mile, which matches up with government estimates on this. They're saying it's probably going to cost between $4 and $6 million per mile to build fencing, not to mention a concrete wall, but that then you have to have the roads that lead up to that fencing just to deliver the material. So sometimes it's going to cost an additional $4 million a mile just to get a road to deliver the resources needed to build any kind of barrier on the border.
And of course, it's not only good guys who can use those roads.
Right. I've actually heard a lot of concerns from people around here that if there is more infrastructure around the border, especially in these rural, remote areas that are hard to navigate already, and therefore the sort of terrain is already a bit of a deterrent, but if there are roads that are built to service this infrastructure, not only could Border Patrol use them, but so could drug smugglers and people smugglers, especially the cartels.
What do we know about how the president will fulfill his promise that Mexico is going to pay for this wall?
Not much, actually. And Mexico and Mexican leaders have been saying over and over again that they are not going to pay for this wall. President Trump has said that he is going to use existing funds from a Bush administration era policy called the Secure Fences Act to start, kind of kickstart the funding to build the wall. That means American taxpayers are going to be paying for the start of this process. But he promises, President Trump promises, that Mexico is going to reimburse us for the wall. President Trump has a meeting coming up with Mexico's president. We'll see how that goes over.
Marketplace's Kimberly Adams on the Mexican-U.S. border down near Douglas, Arizona someplace. Thanks, Kimberly.
Thanks, Kai.
Kimberly's reporting, we ought to say, is supported by the International Women's Media Foundation's Adelante reporting initiative. One of the other things President Trump is promising is a ban on visas being issued to citizens of several Muslim-majority countries, Syria, Iraq, Iran, among them also Somalia. Minnesota has this country's biggest concentration of Somalis, about 65,000 people of Somali origin in all. And word of a possible ban is getting some attention there. From Minneapolis, Marketplace's Annie Baxter has that one.
In Minnesota, the Somali community participates in the labor force at a higher rate than the average American. In the Cedar Riverside neighborhood in Minneapolis, Somali immigrants run clothing stores and restaurants. At the cafe I visited today, folks were on edge. They'd heard President Trump was planning to curb Somali migration.
This is scary.
Merzel Jama, an American citizen, came here from Somalia 21 years ago. He says conflict there has scattered his family all over the globe. Worldwide annual remittances to Somalia have exceeded $1 billion in recent years. And many Somali Americans in Minnesota, like Jama, have relatives they're trying to bring here.
We're willing to have some of them coming here, sponsor them.
Are you worried those plans are going to be held up now?
Yes, I do. Yes.
In recent years, several young men, mostly Somali American, have been arrested in Minnesota for trying to join ISIS in Syria. And last September, a young Somali man stabbed multiple people at a mall in St. Cloud. Ayan Omar, a Somali American teacher in St. Cloud, fears that Somali Americans' peaceful contributions to the community are being forgotten. And she's worried about people back in Somalia suffering a severe drought.
What keeps them alive is that they have the possibility to move on and pursue happiness by not worrying about the everyday necessities that we take for granted.
As President Trump can use an executive order to halt refugee processing. In Minneapolis, I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
The list of winners of the 2016 elections goes like this. Donald Trump, Republicans, cable news. Ratings and ad spending did quite fine during the campaign. Thanks. That is not unusual. What is unusual, though, is for him to stay up. Marketplace's Sabri Benishour has more on that.
At many moments in 2016, you could see it. Wherever there were TVs, in the lobbies of buildings, sidewalks in front of storefronts, airport waiting areas, people stopped to read the headlines or watch the talking heads on cable news.
Total and complete shutdown of Muslims.
That he's articulated the anger of a lot of Americans.
But was often interrupted by protesters.
Viewership across the networks exploded in 2016. It doubled at CNN and MSNBC. And then the election was over. There was triumph or despair, depending on your view, and fatigue. Thomas Umstead is programming editor at Multichannel News.
You would assume that the numbers would significantly fall off after election day.
And for MSNBC and CNN, the number of viewers fell by half or more from their pre-election peaks, according to Nielsen. But Fox was different. Ashwin Naveen is with Samba TV.
Fox News is probably winning more audience.
Fox viewership only fell 23% from its peak. That's major. Last election, it had lost 55% of its peak by this time. During the inauguration, it was the most watched cable network of all.
But the real growth story is actually year over year in ratings.
Networks may not have held on to as much of the election surge as they would like, but they're still up dramatically from January 2016, especially at either end of the political spectrum.
Anderson Cooper is up almost 30% year over year in viewership. Rachel Maddow is up 60% year over year, but the real interesting growth is in the O'Reilly factor, which is up 85% year over year.
And ad spending is following suit. According to Standard Media Index, December ad sales at MSNBC, CNN, and Fox are up by 38%, probably because President Trump so far hasn't given Americans any reason to stop watching. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
I was kind of slammed all day. Anything happen on Wall Street today? We'll have the details when we do the numbers. This has been a challenging week for facts, alternative facts, inaugural audience facts, and then this.
Really simple. What is the average national unemployment rate?
What's the average?
What's the overall unemployment rate?
Are you talking about whether or not we include the full?
I'm just asking you.
I mean, the Bureau of Labor Statistics puts it out.
NPR's Mara Liasson in there and White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer in a back and forth about what the White House believes the unemployment rate to be, 4.7%. By the way, but let me stipulate here that the American labor market is complicated and measuring it is challenging. But having credible government economic statistics matters. It matters to businesses, it matters to investors, and it matters to consumers. From our bureau at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has that one.
Government economic data. It's for investors, bank underwriters, policy wonks, and nerds, right? Well, maybe many other people don't know the precise numbers, i.e. 156,000 jobs added last month, unemployment at 4.7%, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. But those numbers really do matter day to day, says Kimberly Burham at the Penn Wharton Budget Model Project.
So while individuals may not be going to the Bureau of Labor Statistics websites themselves, knowing, say, what unemployment or inflation is doing can help them get a general sense of their economic situation, which can help them make decisions.
Decisions like, should I quit my job and go out to look for a higher paid one? Should I buy a new car on credit or a used one with savings from the bank? Sharon O'Halloran is a political economist at Columbia University, and she says government stats on economic growth, investment activity, employment sectors that are expanding or shrinking all help determine how much and how fast businesses can expand.
Many of these pieces of data are used when banks calculate what the interest rate will be and the probability of failure of a particular loan.
So say, for instance, XYZ Industries wants to buy a fancy new machine to make appliances for new homes. XYZ's owner talks to her bankers and...
So if they believe GDP is going down, if unemployment rate is skyrocketing, there's no investment in this area, so people won't be able to buy homes, then the probability that a bank will lend a medium to small size firm sufficient capital at a favorable rate is probably very low.
Meaning no new machine or additional workers to run it. What about investors in stocks and bonds? Economist John Canali at LPL Financial says accurate economic data is crucial for their decision-making. They look to federal and state government reports and also to the private sector.
Retail sales often gets a lot of attention in markets. There, too, you get reports from companies that are telling markets, you know, what they're seeing in their stores.
Career civil servant statisticians gather and analyze most government economic data. Canali says that data has been highly reliable and generally well insulated from political influence. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
One of the ways to figure out what's going on in this economy over time is to either examine the same set of data over time or, my preference, talk to the same set of people over time. That gets us to another quick chat with Lisa Goldenberg. She is the president of the Delaware Steel Company of Pennsylvania. Lisa, good to talk to you again.
Great to talk to you, too.
We chatted after Election Day. You were not thrilled, but you said, you know what, let's just hitch ourselves up and get to work. You still feeling that way?
I am, and I have to tell you that the steel world is gaga for Trump, regardless of some of the things that maybe we have difficulty with as a person or the way he handles things. When it comes to steel, people are pretty darn happy.
Well, so I imagine you saw this news of the pipeline decisions yesterday morning where he said, literally, I want these pipes to be made with American steel, and you went, yippee, right?
Yeah, of course, yippee, and I think that that's the new reality of what we're going to get used to or hear a lot of with Mr. Trump in the White House. I think he says a lot of things that are what people want to hear when it comes to those kinds of sound bites. I think regardless of what you think of them, when you hear Made in America, everyone says rah-rah.
Mm. Is this going to mean more money in your pocket? I mean, corporate-wise, right?
Well, you know, in the big sense, not on this particular deal. This isn't my contract to have, but more steel, more manufacturing, more people saying Made in America is in general a good thing. There's a caveat to that in that the more is here and the more closed the market is to outsiders, the more prices go up. And we as consumers, so not wearing my steel hat, but we as American consumers are going to pay more for, quote, stuff.
Yeah.
So kind of be careful what you wish for.
Yeah. What are you looking for then through the rest of, say, 2017?
I think 17 is going to be a good year. I think we're not going to see actual stimulus stuff in place, programs or anything, but all you have to do, and you can see Wall Street going crazy, all you have to do is talk about it and people behave as if. I was with some Wall Street guys this week, and they said, yeah, but how about stimulus and bridges and all that? I said, yeah, it's going to sit on an architect's desk and then get planning and then projects for months at a time till it actually hits the street. But just talking about it feels good, doesn't it?
Lisa Goldenberg is the president of Delaware Steel Company of Pennsylvania. We will talk to you soon, all right?
Terrific. Take care. Thank
right,
you so much.
Bye-bye. Coming up,
tweet risk is really is a good word for it. These are the curveballs. No trader can afford to ignore them.
Especially when those 140-character curveballs come from the White House. But first, let's do the numbers. 20,000 is just a number, y'all. The Dow Industrial's up 155 points today, 0.75%, 20,068. The NASDAQ popped up 55 points, just shy of 1%, 5656. S&P 500 up 18 points, 0.8%, 22.98. Boeing soared 4.25% today after announcing a quarterly profit and predicting strong revenues for the year. The company said its 787 Dreamliner is finally paying off after 10 years of losses. Some of the biggest gainers were the banks led by Goldman Sachs. Shares up 1.5% today, 33.0% since Election Day. Bond prices fell. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note rose to 2.51%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Hey, everybody. Molly here.
It's Kai, but you already knew that.
You did. But we have something that we would like to tell you together.
We are doing a new podcast. It's called Make Me Smart, about the things we want to know more about but don't always have time to dig into on this daily program.
Yeah, and it's about you, too, the things that you want to know more about and the things that you're an expert on. We'd like to have you on the show, too.
And mostly it's me and Molly having fun. Check us out at marketplace.org/makemesmart. There's lots more info there.
And please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you podcast.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. The following is a statement of fact. Donald Trump is doing as president exactly what Donald Trump said he would do as president. Like it, don't like it, but there have been no surprises so far. That doesn't mean, though, that what he's doing is what one might expect economically from a more conventional Republican presidency. And therein lies a whole lot of the, wow, what's going on that you hear out there. David Frum was once a speechwriter for George W. Bush. He was also a regular commentator for us, by the way. He is now a senior editor at The Atlantic magazine. David, it's good to speak with you.
Hey, thank you.
So how much of what the president is doing on the economic front is within, say, a standard deviation of what we might expect from a Republican White House?
Well, of what the administration as a whole is doing, a fair bit. You would expect any Republican president to, for example, reopen the Keystone Pipeline. And the same thing for the pipeline running through Dakota, making sure that those things go forward. Very standard. The big tax cut that is surely coming. That's a very classic Republican thing, too.
What about the federal budget and his infrastructure plan and the contest that he will surely have with Republicans in Congress over the debt and deficit?
Trump clearly does not care very much about deficits. Look, as a businessman, the secret of his success was borrowing a lot of money and not paying it back. And he has often recommended that strategy to the United States. Borrow a lot of money and then if things are difficult, then you persuade the creditors to accept less in return. So,
And that's a whole discussion of the federal – the sanctity of the federal debt, and we're not going to go there.
Right. But if you're someone who believes that you can get away with not paying the debt back in full, well, why wouldn't you want to borrow a lot? But look, it is joking aside, the Republican Party always ends up – it sort of gets offside and then it gets in trouble and then it remembers that the American social insurance state is here to stay and it has to be made to work. You cannot indulge these fantasies that you're going to build an Ayn Rand republic in a modern democracy. You're not going to do that. So just stop wasting time telling your core supporters that you're going to try make the social insurance state – work in a moderate way and in a fiscally responsible way. But again, this is the Trump cabinet Secretary of the Treasury, Secretary mm-hmm. of the Interior, those kinds of officials, the Senate-confirmed people, is shaping up in most cases as relatively normal. It's in the White House where they are not Senate-confirmed that you get the Star Wars cantina scene.
How much then, just to riff off that a little bit, is where is the risk of normalizing the out-of-standard deviation behavior by looking at this stuff and saying, oh, well, this is to be expected?
I would suggest a different way of thinking about it. For those of you who are inclined to oppose Donald Trump, you need to remember it's a two-party system. The party you don't like is going to win elections probably approximately half the time. And when they win, they are going to do things you don't like. And that's democracy. And that's part of the way of making sure that the ship of state steers a steady course. You don't steer on a straight line. You tack left. You tack right. And thus you hope to find your way. So if Donald Trump is doing something that a President Rubio or a President Bush or a President Walker or even a President Cruz would do, you don't have to like it. But it's not something to set your hair on fire for. The things to set your hair on fire for are the things that President Bush or Walker or Rubio or Cruz would never, ever do. What they would never do is make threats against particular companies. What they would not do is use the office of the presidency to enrich themselves. And what they certainly would not do is try to use the instrumentalities of the state to suppress criticism and to conceal their own wrongdoing.
David Frum is a senior editor at The Atlantic. David, thanks very much.
Thank you.
After a couple of days in relative hiatus, the President of the United States was back on Twitter last night and this morning. Domestic politics this time mostly, although Mr. Trump is no stranger to the well-placed business tweet as well, as we all know. Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Ford, General Motors all have felt the 140-character sting. Corporate America is adjusting, as is finance America, where traders and software engineers are looking for an edge. Marketplace's Mark Garrison has that one from New York.
We should say this is beyond Twitter. Trump also rocks the market through traditional channels, such as his recent press conference.
We're the largest buyer of drugs in the world, and yet we don't bid properly. And we're going to start bidding. I'm going to save billions of dollars over a period of time.
Pharmaceutical stocks dropped like a rock. Presidents can impact markets generally, but a president willing to call out individual companies repeatedly and without warning, that is unheard of.
Certainly in my life, and I've been in the industry since 1980 for, 37 years, I haven't seen anything like it.
Larry Tabb is CEO of Tabb Group, which tracks changes in market technology. Trump's Twitter daggers are maddening to professional investors who spend money and time choosing stocks to own.
And then all of a sudden the commander-in-chief says, yeah, those guys moved 1,000 jobs offshore. We're going to beat them up and fine them because of it. And all of a sudden, it has a very significant impact on the value of that company's stock. And there are a lot of investors that are not very happy with that.
Wall Street doesn't wallow in unhappiness long. Pain on the trading floor drives strategy change, new technology, and in this case, even a new phrase. Charles Jones is a finance professor at Columbia Business School.
Tweet risk is really is a good word for it. These are the curveballs. No trader can afford to ignore them.
Traders monitored social media well before Trump's election. It showcased its power to move markets in 2013 when the Associated Press Twitter account reported breaking news, explosions at the White House. The whole market tanked. Here's how it unfolded on CNBC.
In a very short period of time, take a look at the right-hand side of your chart. We saw the Dow Jones Industrial Average go from a gain of 135 points to negative 12 in under a minute and a half.
And just as quickly, it recovered once it was clear the AP was hacked and the report was bogus.
I remember that day perfectly because it was pure chaos.
Rachel Mayer was working on J.P. Morgan's trading floor. She was part of a team that used algorithms to drive automated trading, long a tool professional investors have used to speed up reaction time. Now, she's CEO and co-founder of Trigger Finance, a tech startup that brings those kinds of tools to regular investors through an app.
For example, if the Fed raises interest rates, you either just want to get an alert or actually place an order to sell something.
After Trump won, people started asking for a custom feature to track his tweets about companies. Here's Mayer showing off what they built.
So say if you own Lockheed Martin stock, if he tweeted about Lockheed Martin or even the F-35, you would have gotten an alert that said...
This is now the most popular feature on Trigger, but Mayer warns against making rash trades based on what Trump says, and setting up automated trading based on social media is dicey right now. Existing technology doesn't do a perfect job of understanding human language as opposed to cold numbers. Professor Jones again.
Our language is very complicated, and the computers have a hard time figuring out exactly what language means.
And it's even trickier in the abbreviated world of Twitter, as Larry Tabb explains.
Most firms, even today, don't have automated trading strategies based upon social media. Mostly what they're doing is they're waving big flags out to say, hey, look, something's happening here. Let's bring a human in to understand what the impact of this is.
But of course, investors would love to speed things up by cutting out the human. Wall Street, software engineers, and artificial intelligence researchers are working on it now. And Trump's Twitter habit gives them a rich new set of experiments to run. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Final note on the way out today. What I'm imagining is going to turn into a regular series we're going to wind up doing. The working title is Business Activities of the President of the United States. Item one, the President's Mar-a-Lago Resort down in Florida. CNBC reports today that the club is raising, which is to say doubling, its membership fee to $200,000. The bump was effective January the 1st. Check your calendars for why that matters. Item number two, the CEO of the President's Hotel Management Company, Trump International Hotels Management, LLC, said yesterday he plans to triple the number of Trump hotels in the United States, and this is a quote, over the next 4 to 8 years, end of quote. All right, we're out of here. Landmark day for the blue chips. The Dow up 155 points, 0.75%, 20,068. The NASDAQ up 55 points. That's just shy of 1% there. The S&P 500 up 18 points, about 0.8%. Chris Clark, Brad Fisher, Jake Gorski, Bill Lance, Jeff Peters, Daniel Ramirez, Charlton Thorpe, and Ben Tolliday engineer the broadcast for us. I'm Kai Rizdal. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. And this is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.